Right. It falls to me to say a few final words. In one respect, words are superfluous, I think. I cannot be wholly objective. None of us who've struggled with this problem and this document for so long can be wholly objective. There's a great deal in it. You can't possibly have taken in all that it says. Copies will be available, as I'll tell you in a moment. But it's my belief, my dear friends, that God willing, this will prove to be one of the great historic documents in the history of the Church. As you ponder it, as you read it, do so carefully and with prayer. There's much in it. You know as well as I do that no document that could be invented by the mind of man could possibly please everybody in every detail. But I believe that on balance, this is a magnificent statement of the faith which has brought us here together. This affirmation which you have just heard read, there's two things I want to say about it. Remember, it is provisional. It is not a constitution. It has not been adopted by anybody. It is presented for your consideration and thought, and for the individual action of every individual who learns of it, who has heard it, who may read it, who learns of it. It's a beginning. It's not an end. Only a beginning. It's an affirmation, not a constitution. What happens next depends on you. From those to whom you talk when you go back home. Only you and others like you can make anything come of this. Otherwise, until something comes of it, it's a piece of paper. I hope the quality of the paper is good. I'm sure that what's on the paper is good. You are called on to make individual decisions, each in the light of your own conscience. Nobody, least of all us who have presented this paper to you, are going to make any judgments on you. Everyone must answer to his own conscience and beyond that to God as to what he decides to do. You are called on to go back and make your own decisions. You can, if you like, as I'll explain, make a decision here today if you want to. But most of you will want to go back and pray and ponder and think and read and study. You'll be called on to help your parishes make decisions. Some parishes have already made their decisions. Other parishes are in the process of doing so. Many haven't really started because they didn't have a starting point. We hope this affirmation will be a starting point. People to make decisions. Often enough, all too often, you will find yourselves in a lonely minority, maybe in isolation. Sometimes you'll be in a majority in whatever decision you make. We ask you to take this affirmation home with you. It will be available after the Eucharist on tables in the registration area where you registered for the conference in the beginning. Obviously, it's a long, rather lengthy document. Question of cost, printing, entered into things. We have more than enough copies for the people here. You may have up to 5 copies apiece if you want to, and take them with you. But please do not take more than 5 copies, or there won't be enough. you are free to reproduce this or have your parish reproduce it and distribute it as widely as you like. We wish we could give you unlimited copies, but that's the most we can do. Take it home, study it, show it to others, discuss it, pray over it. Try to bring about, we urge you, parish or other group acceptance of it. At the very least, if you can, after prayerful consideration, make it your own personal affirmation. Now, forms will also be available at the tables in the registration area by which you can make this your personal affirmation or your parish affirmation, by which you can signify your acceptance of this as a statement of your faith and your intentions on a provisional basis. I emphasize that word provisional. This can be nothing but provisional, to carry us over an interim until a church structure comes more fully into being. You may take up to 10 of those forms along with you if you want to. They are only a single sheet, and we were able to have more printed out. And I'm sure that in many cases you will wish to take more than one back with you for friends, fellow parishioners, and again, you are free to have them Xeroxed or copied in any way you like. And the instructions are on them as to where they should be sent if you desire to sign them and join yourselves in solidarity with us in this great affirmation. You may sign them here today if you like. Take them off into a corner, read the affirmation if you like, sign the declaration if you like, and hand it in at the tables where they are handed out, here that there will be people at each table, hand them in to them. The greatest and most effective step you can take is something concrete and lasting and real and significant in the life of this church is to be accomplished, is to go back and bring your parish into the developing structure of the Anglican Church of North America. As you do so, place yourself in contact with other like-minded parishes in your area and form provisional dioceses, because that's the way the church is going to have, the church is here. That's the way the church structure is going to have to grow from the bottom up. From parishes coming together, from new parishes being formed, from them they're getting together and forming provisional dioceses. Form these dioceses and parishes, which will be prepared in due course, to send diocesan and parish representatives to the Constitutional Assembly, which will be called in due course to assemble at the earliest possible time, but at least sometime in 1978. Now, as usual, some people wish such an assembly could be called together to meet next week. And other people, of course, will hope that it never meets. But we expect to disappoint that latter group. At any rate, be patient. Same problem we had with this gathering. Some thought it came much too late. Others thought it came too soon. There has to be some date chosen, but preparation is all important. And the preparation for this gathering was as nothing compared to the preparation that will be necessary for a constitutional assembly. Much advance work will have to be done, much organization. So at this time, we are certainly unable, also incompetent, to set a date and a place. That will have to be done by bishops and provisional dioceses as they come along. And you will be kept informed of developments in this respect. Remember again that this is provisional. It is voluntary. Nobody is imposing anything on anybody. If you choose to separate, as many we hope will do so, we hope that you will feel in conscience bound to do so in defense of the faith, to enter for the time being into a provisional body based on provisional principles, pending the formation of a permanent constitution and canons by a regular representative body. Now, many of you I know the question that is in the minds of many of you. What about bishops? I agree with what Father Clendenin said last night. The first step is up to you. The church must grow from the bottom. Dioceses must be formed. Two provisional dioceses have been formed. They must proceed in due course and under their own rules and provisions to elect bishops. And then those bishops must seek consecration. And that consecration must be valid. And we hope, God willing, it will take place. And it will take place at the hands of valid Anglican bishops. Now, my dear friends, there are other bishops than Anglican bishops who are valid bishops and who can lay hands on people. I would be very happy if His Holiness the Pope would appear and lay his hands on people. But that is not the way we want to start. We have affirmed again and again that we are Anglican, acting as Anglicans in the Anglican tradition, and we want to start with bishops validly consecrated by undoubtedly valid Anglican bishops. And we have every hope and prospect that that will take place. Not today. Maybe some of you thought there would be a consecration here today. There won't be, let me tell you. Not tomorrow, very likely, as far as I know. Maybe God has other plans. I don't know just when, but we go forward in faith that God will bless us and our efforts and what we do after we go out of this room. We have every hope and some good prospects that three, at least, Anglican bishops will be found who will be willing in due course to consecrate bishops chosen by provisional dioceses. We go forward with complete faith in God. My dear friends, that is the most essential element we must have here and take away with us. Faith in God. If what we are doing is right, He will prosper it. If it is not, in due course, He will make that abundantly clear to us. Meanwhile, we go forward with faith in Him. We are reminded of the case, I'm reminded of the case, of the early church in the United States. Circumstances are somewhat different. The issues were not exactly the same. But they didn't have any bishop on these shores. And they didn't have a national church. They had groups of clergy in various colonies who saw far from eye to eye, had the widest possible divergence of differences. Some of them didn't even think there should be bishops. But the clergy of Connecticut felt that action had to be taken. That if the church was to continue as an apostolic body on this continent, it had to have bishops. So what did they do? On March the 25th, 1783, they met. Believe me, they were a small group. There were exactly 10 clergymen present at that meeting. And they elected two men. One of these men, unfortunately, has rather tended to be forgotten in the mists of history. I know of him because he was the rector of the parish to which I belonged for many years in Connecticut, Jeremiah Leeming. Elderly man who was thrown into jail during the revolution because he insisted under his oath and his duty as a priest on repeating at every service the prayer for the royal family. That didn't go down very well with the Patriots. They threw him into jail. He languished there for many months. His health was irreparably impaired. He came out a cripple, and he declined the election. But a second man had been chosen, Samuel Seabury. And Samuel Seabury went out, sort of like the proverbial bread upon the waters. He went out upon the waters. He didn't know where he was going to find consecration. But he went out with faith in God. He went to England, and he went around, and he rang doorbells, and he sat in the ante rooms of bishops and archbishops, and he was treated with some respect sometimes and with scant respect some other times. And he begged and he pleaded and he cajoled. And he didn't know how to get himself consecrated because the universal answer seemed to be no. But he persisted. Every avenue seemed closed. But finally, on November 14th, 1784, 20 long months after he had been elected, he found three consecrators in three sympathetic and courageous and faithful Scottish bishops to whom we owe the episcopate in the Episcopal Church in the United States. It was a long, dark, anxious period. I hope we don't have to wait 20 months, but we can wait longer if we have to. I don't think we're going to have to wait anything like 20 months. It was a dark, anxious period full of discouragement and frustration. We have lived through a good many anxious, dark, frustrating months since Minneapolis and before, and since Quebec before. We live through similar periods. We don't know what the weeks and the months ahead of us hold for us precisely. Let us always remember some words of Samuel Seabury at a moment of a very low ebb in his fortunes, in the very middle of this long period of waiting, when he didn't know where to turn next. He described himself at that moment as unconnected, unsupported, unbefriended, with nothing to rely on but the goodness of my cause and my own resolution. Let us add to that category what Seabury undoubtedly had in his mind, the love of God and trust in God, and let us go forward in the same spirit, unafraid and in full faith. I'd like to ask Bishop Chambers to come to the podium. He has a message.